Good morning, everybody. Thanks for staying up late with us. Matt Pabala here with you until 5 a.m. on 720 WGN. We're live from our Skyline Studios here in Chicago. Joining us on the phone right now is filmmaker Cynthia Lowen. She was a producer and writer on the film Bully that came out in 2011, a documentary that achieved a lot of honors as it followed five families in schools across the country, and the bullying epidemic that goes on in our schools led to a lot of discussion and a lot of work being done on that. Her film that is premiering soon here in Chicago is called Netizens. I had a chance to watch it earlier today, and the filmmaker, the director, Cynthia Lowen, joins us on the phone right now. Good morning, Cynthia. How are you?
Great. How are you, Matt?
I'm good. Thank you so much for staying up late and chatting with us. I imagine 3 a.m. Eastern time is not your normal interview time.
Well, you know, New York, they say the city that never sleeps.
That's true. People are out. If you walked outside right now, there's people hanging out. So might as well be awake, right? Well, thank you so much for doing this. We appreciate it. I got to watch the documentary earlier today. And I've got to tell
you,
Cynthia, I'm guessing you get this from guys in general. And we saw a little bit of it, I thought, in the documentary. But a lot of us are pretty dumbfounded by the reality of what you guys face on a seemingly everyday basis. And your film gets into some pretty heavy issues of pretty serious harassment. And It's really just within the last couple of years that I think a lot of guys realize at all that women go through an insane amount of harassment on a daily basis. There was some sort of video. This is, I think, a couple of years ago now. It was somebody in New York being followed by a camera, but you couldn't tell she was being followed by a camera, is my guess. And, you know, she was wearing kind of a tighter, like, you know, yoga pant type outfit and was being catcalled every block she went on, like an insane amount. Are you familiar with this video, I'm guessing?
Yeah, I am.
And when I saw that, I'm looking at that like, well, that's not real. That can't be real. And then I started talking to women I work with who were like, yeah, that's life. That's how life works. And I was really just blown away by it. And our eyes are being opened more and more to things. And the age of technology, it's interesting because it's you know, catcalling is a guy actually seeing a woman and having the gall to just do that. And just, hey, baby, and expect a response and get offended when you're not very pleased that we're just yelling something at you. And it's a real interesting psychological, what the hell is going on there? But then on the other side, what you tackle in this film is people that really get to hide behind their cowardice and just destroy people's lives from afar, hiding behind the veil of websites and social media and everything else. Was Bully a launching point when you made Bully, about 8 years ago now? Did you start realizing what was going on to a lot of women, or is this something that was really personal for you that you've experienced?
You know, there's certainly a really strong connection between Bully and this film, Netizens. And I think the biggest thing is, you know, that all of us, when we're online, you know, we see, you know, to different levels, I would say, we see threats, we see the comments on YouTube videos. We'll probably have been sent something at some point in our lives. It's like, oh, hey, did you see this new, you know, leak of celebrity photos? So it's something that I feel like have become really like normal in our online communities. And in the same way that bullying, when we set out to make Bully, we were like, hey, you know, like what's going on with kids and bullying in schools is really not normal. You know, the attitude was kind of like, well, you know, that's middle school, that's kids being kids, that's human nature. And what we were seeing in, you know, the spring of 2009 when we started that film were a bunch of suicides of really young children. And it was being tied to them having been bullied. And we were like, this is not normal. And this is not something that we have to accept as part of our, you know, day-to-day, like, acts of violence that we're just like, oh, yeah, that's just life. That's just middle school. So what we were able to do with that film was really show for someone who's going through that and for families how devastating it is and just how much it affects, you know, someone's whole life. And with that film, we screened it for 5 million kids free of cost with their educators, you know, across the United States. We had mayors in all 50 states screen it. We had it screened at the White House, and we saw this real shift. And I think the most important shift we saw out of that film is, you know, most schools now have some sort of policy. Even if it's not working, at least they know that they should be doing something. And this word is now part of, like, our lexicon. Like, this is something that's happening. So when I was finishing that film, people were saying, have you been looking at what's going on online? Have you looked and seeing what's going on online among kids? And frankly, I was like, yes, what's happening, you know, online with kids is really bad. But I also was like, I can't spend another, you know, year inside of a middle school. It's just too, it's too hard. It's too, I mean, I love middle school kids, but it's like, it's rough.
Don't get me wrong, but you had a lot of it.
Yeah. So I was like, okay. And then, of course, you know, what's going on with women online is like a huge thing. So in the fall of 2015, there are all these attacks on women in the gaming industry. And you may have heard of this. It was sort of called Gamergate.
Yeah, absolutely.
And so out of that, you know, I was hearing these stories like women being threatened with like really specific threats of violence and murder. And, you know, it's always like really graphic, like rape and murder threats. And a lot of women were having to leave their home. But what I was hearing was that their law enforcement was just sort of like, yeah, you know, I don't know. It could be someone next door. It could be someone 2,000 miles away. You know, turn off your computer. Like, call us when someone, you know, is actually at your door with a gun. Yeah. And that response I thought was really, like, you know, inadequate. Especially in this day and age when most people don't deliver their threats, you know, they don't like write you a letter with a death threat, right, which would be dealt with really differently. Most of the time our threats and things like that are happening digitally now. So I wanted to start looking into that. And that's where I started filming with Anita Sarkeesian, who was one of the women who was targeted as part of those Gamergate attacks.
Well, you have a piece of the documentary where she is clicking on all the different, like, look like Twitter DMs or messages she was getting, and just boom, 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 showing them on the screen, and they're awful, and they're vile, and they're disgusting.
Yeah,
and, you know, and it's so easy for somebody to make up. She showed this, you know, guy we assume just made up a Twitter handle, has no followers, isn't following anyone. It's just purely made to torture her.
Yeah. Yeah, and, you know, I think that really shows what's kind of different. Like, men totally get harassed online. Men definitely get threats online. This is not only women who have this happening, but there's a few things that are different in the ways in which women are uniquely targeted, which is that it's really often really graphic, sexualized threats. Yeah. And, you know, for things like, so one of the other things that I uncovered was a lot of image, non-consensual image exploitation is sort of the official term, but, you know, revenge porn, aka revenge porn. So, you know, a lot of women in the film, for whatever reason, you know, whether they were coerced into sharing a picture, whether they were filmed without their knowledge, which is really common, or they were in a relationship with someone they thought they could trust and had shared pictures. And then what ends up happening is that those pictures become abused and, you know, spread all over these revenge porn websites or all over Facebook, or the perpetrator will email the photos to, it's always the same people. It's always like her dad, her boss, her workplace, her colleagues. And in that case, you know, pictures of women naked or sexualized have a really different effect than if you're sending those of a man. And absolutely, that's part of, like, that cultural, you know, deep cultural thing.
You're right.
That we're still kind of working on here.
Yeah, we've probably got a ways to go on that. But yeah, there certainly is a difference. And, you know, with a few of the different people that you follow in the film, there's a scene where let's see, it's Tina, is it pronounced Rain?
Tina Rainey.
So Tina Rainey had a boyfriend, went bad, and he just starts creating website after website accusing her of all sorts of malicious things, and I'd be interested in the follow-up on why this happens. What is wrong with these men that do this? Because this is like, you know, this is the ultimate bad breakup. This is like, you know, in movies it would be stalking somebody till you kill them. Now it's like this cowardice hiding and doing this from afar type thing. But you know, just destroying her life, destroying her prospects for jobs, because now, you know, she tells a story about going on a job interview and it's great. She's got an offer and everything's good until she meets with one of the younger people in the company who then naturally is going to say, oh, I'm going to Google her and find out more. And then all of these websites pop up, which say all these malicious, awful things. Suddenly she never hears from the company again. And there's a scene where I forget if it's at a Toastmasters meeting. There's something she's at where she's talking to a guy afterwards. And I feel bad for this guy that he ended up in your film, because he's just like, well, I don't know. You're kind of putting too much weight on it, right? And I was like, and she was so nice to him. But I was like, oh, dude, just shut up. Just stop talking. Don't talk. There's a camera right there. And he's like, I don't know. I think you just cut. This doesn't sound as bad, but in my mind, this is how he sounded. I don't know. I think you just, you know, you're giving it too much credence. You're putting too much, you know, you're thinking about it too much. And it's like, oh my God, and I guess it's good that's in the film, because that sums up the whole problem right there. That women are suffering and guys are like, I don't know, what's the big deal?
I mean, the funny thing about that encounter with this guy who, you know, she's just shared, you know, in just total emotionally, she's like totally devastated, you know, and he comes up to her. But I love that the exchange starts with, it might be just because I'm a guy.
Yeah.
And I'm like, oh no, oh no, that's where, just stop, just get out while you're ahead. It's cool. But you know, then he goes on to say, like, what's the big deal? You know, just essentially turn off your computer and don't make such a big deal of it. And
who cares if the rest of the world knows this? It's only if you care about it that it matters. Yeah, that was really strange. And it's funny, as I was watching that, Cynthia, I was kind of like getting upset with Tina, like, she's like apologizing to, you know, you're right. You know, it's true. But on this other side, yeah, I can see that. Yeah, maybe you got a point there, but really it's, and she's so nice to him. I'm like, no, like you gotta, you know, slap him down with some words here and tell him, no, dude, here's the problem with the world, that you are saying that right now. And just like, it's fine. 'Cause you're going to raise some son to be a jackass who does stuff like this, or isn't learning ahead of time that we can't do this to people. You can't send stuff out and not care. It's amazing. At one point in your film, the lawyer, Carrie Goldberg, who's just so much fun to watch on camera. She has such life about her. But she's speaking at a conference and she says, these are criminal acts. They just don't have a law yet. And that really, I thought, was fascinating, because people are being devastated, but there's such little help from law enforcement. Where is the state of laws being passed to help against revenge porn, against sharing these things, against, you know, creating websites just to hurt people? Because it sounds like the struggle is with whether it's the social media services or a web hosting company, because they want to defend freedom of speech very strongly, and we're all in favor of that. On the same wavelength, on the other side, you're destroying people's lives. You know, we can't scream fire in a theater. There are limits to our freedom of speech. How are things coming with regulations and laws to get passed to try to help stem this tide and put some teeth into stopping these things?
Yeah, well, I have to say, since the film came out, I am happy to say that New York has now passed a revenge porn law, and there's a number of states now that do have laws. You know, some states you have to prove intent to harm, so that really takes the teeth out of laws, because you can just say, oh, well, you know, I thought she'd be flattered, or I was just, you know, just joking around with my friends. So provisions like that really water down these bills. But there are states that have some really good bills, and I film with some women who, those stories aren't necessarily in the film, but I film with women who were able to get, you know, some kind of justice in states like New Jersey that have really good, strong laws for that very specific thing, revenge porn, which is like easier to, I think, outline and identify. As opposed to other kinds of threats or privacy violations. And I have to say, I think that in a lot of ways, the tech companies are really hiding behind this notion of, oh, well, we're just protecting speech. We're protecting the First Amendment. Because as you said, you know, threats to murder someone are not protected speech.
Right.
And yet you have women like Anita Sarkeesian who just, you know, are inundated constantly with violent death threats. You know, things like stalking are illegal. Things like video voyeurism, which is something that happens all the time, you know, where you'll see, you know, people who are filmed without their knowledge or consent, you know, even in public, like the whole phenomenon of upskirts. There's yeah. tons of these websites devoted to, you know, women in public who don't know they're being filmed. And I think that in a lot of ways, the companies are hiding behind this idea that they're just fostering the First Amendment because it's expensive for them to have to actually go in and, you know, have staff on hand going through these threats, pulling them off, responding. So I think there's, you know, a real need for them to have policies that actually really protect the privacy and safety of their users. Because, you know, Facebook, Twitter, Google, these are companies, private companies, that can make choices about the kind of content that they want to prioritize or have available on their websites. And if, you know, death threats are something that they want to eliminate, they're perfectly well within their rights to do so. But I think that beyond that, this idea that it's just the internet, just turn off your computer, is really big, you know, for all of us. I hear it from all kinds of people. What's the big problem? Why don't you turn off your computer? Just change your password. But, you know, there's a case in the film where there's a young woman who someone has hacked, you know, into, like, everything in her life, her phone, her computer. It's someone, you know, she had met someone on a dating site. She decided she didn't want to see them. She never met them through this dating site. And then they start going after her. And lo and behold, she ends up being advertised on Craigslist. Her pictures are being used to advertise her for intimate encounters on Craigslist. And then the perpetrator is impersonating her to the men who respond to these ads and are sending men to her home,
right,
to her workplace. And, you know, those guys are also, they're being used also, yeah, you know, and it turns into a really dangerous situation. She had men who were trying to break into her apartment. And a lot of times what the perpetrators who are impersonating the women will do is say, oh, you know, I have violent fantasies. I want you to come and break into my apartment. I want you to assault me. I'll protest. But that's all part of this agreement that we have of this scenario. And so when this young woman called law enforcement, you know, numerous times, they would not respond. And when she tried to call, and this was going on for 4 years that they were posting these ads like 10 times a week. This was not just like a one-off situation. It was like really, really in-depth here. And, you know, Craigslist was not preventing the perpetrator from using her pictures. And so, you know, the platform was also not preventing these ads from going up. So I think that attitude of just like from law enforcement also of like, it's just the internet, you know, it's not real, is really pervasive. And so part of my thing with this, making this film, was to try and show, you know, no, it's actually really dangerous when you have, you know, men thinking they're showing up to have a date with you or more than that, at your door that you haven't invited there. That's dangerous when a website is going around with such bad information about you that every time an employer Googles you, you can't get a job. You know, Tina was in this for, and this was another interesting thing, was all these women I filmed with, it wasn't just like this had been going on for like a few months.
Yeah.
It had been years.
Yeah. It's amazing. The movie is premiering here in Chicago on Monday, September 23rd at 7:30 p.m. at the Carasotti Showplace Icon on Delano here in Chicago. You can get tickets at netizensfilm.com, netizens, N-E-T-I-Z-E-N-S, film.com for tickets. On October 22nd, it's going to be available on Amazon and Google Play, Xbox, and Apple. I have a couple more quick questions, Cynthia, but I have to do the news. Since you're up so late anyways, is there any chance you'd be willing to hang on a few more minutes so we could talk just a little bit more?
Of course.
Cynthia Lohan, filmmaker, is on the phone with us talking about her new film, Netizens. They're doing a national screening tour again at the Carasota Showplace Icon Monday, the 23rd at 7:30 p.m. Netizensfilm.com. We'll do a little bit more after we take a quick break and do the news here on 720 WGN. Matt Babal here with you on 720 WGN. Filmmaker Cynthia Lohan was kind enough to give us a couple more minutes of her time at 2:37 in the morning, 3:37 in New York City. You're probably heading to a club after this, something like that, living that crazy, you know, New York nightlife, right? you are so in jammies and like having a cup of tea right now, right?
Yeah, completely.
All right, a couple more quick questions. You know, it's interesting. At the end there, before news, you were talking about how law enforcement is so like, well, when it's this, when it's that, when it's this, just ignore it, turn off your computer. And I wonder if we could get everybody to just look at it as, what if this was your son or daughter who was going through this? You would never tell them, just ignore them, or just don't worry about it, right? I mean, that would never be the advice you would give to anybody you truly cared about. So why is that how we just dismiss this? It's really sad, I think, when we do it that way.
Well, you know, I think it's a really big problem, and there's a few different things going on, and I think it's worth like unpacking. You know, I think on the one hand, you know, if you're getting death threats online, or you know, your nude pictures are on like 1,000 websites, and you've got people showing up at your door, and you're terrified, or you know, any number of the things that can happen. Someone's stalking you. You think someone's hacked into your phone and it's following you, or seems to know everything that you're emailing or texting because you think you have keylogger software or something on your phone. So, you know, when you call law enforcement, even though these things, you know, like death threats are against the law, stalking is against the law, video voyeurism is against the law, what will happen is the law enforcement official who shows up may just not really have training. You know, they may not be really digitally literate to like know, really understand how you know, Twitter works, or what a cyber mob looks like, or you know, why it would be problematic for your address tied to death threats to be out there. They may not know about swatting. You know, swatting is a really common and super dangerous thing where someone will call a SWAT team and say call the police and say that there's like an active shooter situation when there isn't, and you know, people have been killed from this kind of thing. So I think it's that the law enforcement official may just not really understand how the threats are working or what the online platforms are, and for them they're like, I can't really like deal with that right now. Just like, you know, I have some person who's like physically harmed and bleeding over here that I need to get to, you know, just turn off your computer and I need to get to the thing that seems more tangibly urgent. But I think the other thing that happens is that they may know that this is a really big problem and that you're endangered, but it's really hard to get things. It could be hard if you have a judge that doesn't understand digital literacy. They may not issue a warrant for a search for an IP address to uncover who is sending the threats. Where are they coming from? Is it your neighbor or is it someone, you know, 1,000 miles away? So these investigations require resources. And if it's going up the chain and the people above you are not going to give you the tools and resources that you need to adequately investigate, you know that, you know, you're facing a real uphill battle from the whole system. If you know that prosecutors aren't going to prosecute these cases because they may not understand, you know, what's the difference between online stalking versus, you know, offline classic stalking, are they going to go after digital stalking? Are they going to go after people who have these major privacy violations? If the state doesn't have a revenge porn law, you know, what are you going to do? Maybe the laws don't even support, you know, some of these crimes. So I think that it's not just that they are dismissing the crimes altogether. It may also be that they're just like, they feel like their hands are tied.
Let me ask you, because there's one piece of the film where one of Carrie Goldberg's clients, I believe it was, if I'm remembering this correctly, she had gone through a lot with her finding something out, and then when they find out who is tormenting her, the girl declines the press charges and just stops talking to police and just walks away from the whole thing.
Yeah.
And while that is so incredibly frustrating, I guess I could also understand where you just want this to end and you don't necessarily want to go through any more with it, having to prosecute and go through the trial and whatever else would happen from there. How tough is that for people like Carrie who are trying to make an impact here? I know she wants to protect that one person and help them, and she did that, but then to not be able to prosecute the person or make an example of them or maybe make any real traction on the overall problem. Is that a frustration that's common?
Well, you know, so in this situation, as you said, this is the young woman whose pictures are being used to basically traffic her or, you know, advertise her for sex against her will online. And this has been going on for years. And so finally, they were able to uncover who the perpetrator was. And once that happened, she just disappeared. She said, I don't want to go any further with this. And I can't cooperate anymore with law enforcement, as you said. And so I can't say exactly who the perpetrator was or what or why, but what I would assume is that she felt really endangered and she was afraid of pushing this forward because of who she'd learned the perpetrator was for her own personal safety. And, you know, that's a real issue. And the thing is, you kind of can't talk about digital abuse, online harassment, without also really talking about domestic violence. And it's a huge, what I uncovered in making this film is that, you know, you've got prominent people who get targeted by mobs who send them death threats. But I would say, you know, so many people who are victimized this way are in abusive relationships and they're trying to get out. And they're being threatened with pictures. They're being threatened that if they leave, you know, they're going to lose their children because the person is going to post, you know, compromising pictures of them or spread really terrible information about them. And they're afraid, you know, these images and information you can spread out there with a click of a button can really ruin someone's life. And if you're afraid that, you know, the court may take away your children because, you know, there's nude pictures of you and you're afraid that you're not going to be able to get a job because someone has just ruined your Google search results with all kinds of garbage and you're afraid you can't support yourself, that has, like, you know, that classic kind of outcome for a lot of domestic violence situations, which is to keep someone, you know, under control and afraid and afraid that if they leave, they're not going to be able, they're going to lose their family, they're going to lose their ability to survive. So it's a big, you know, that whole classic scenario is like you were saying earlier, you know, why do people do this? Why is this happening? And I think that's, there's a lot of different reasons, but that's the way that domestic violence has kind of gone 2.0 is a big part of it.
Was it tempting at all? Because as I'm watching the documentary and that we can't find these people, we can't get law enforcement. And I'm thinking, well, there's ways, if you have the means, to figure out who these people are. Was there a temptation at all to figure out who they were and confront them on your end, or were you like, no, let's just focus on this side of it?
I felt really I felt like it was really important to show that these women were up against a system that was really making it impossible for them to get justice. And they were up against, you know, tech companies that were not, you know, removing the content. And eventually, I will say, almost all tech companies, you know, Google, Facebook, they all have policies now where revenge porn, Google will de-index revenge porn. Facebook across the board has banned it. And Facebook has done some things that are really effective where they have technology now where once they've identified an image as revenge porn, you can no longer upload it or share it in any way across their platforms. So that includes on Instagram. It includes in private messaging. And so what they've done is really put in place some technology that stops the spread of this, you know, form of harassment, these spreading these images at the source, which is great. So, you know, these are all developments that have come along in the years since I started the project. But, you know, I felt like you, like, in a way, asking the perpetrator, you know, would you ask someone, like, why did you punch her in the face? Or, you know, why did you, like, you know, well, hit her with a car? Why did you threaten to murder her? It's sort of like, that to me was less important than sure. making that distinction of that's abuse, it's not okay. But if we accept that that's not okay, why can't we get justice?
Yeah.
And I will add, in a lot of situations, I didn't feel like it was safe for the women.
I would imagine that would probably be, in my mind, the biggest concern. Because I would say,
yeah,
well, if somebody punched somebody in the face, I wouldn't ask them because we already know who that is. The interesting thing here, or the conundrum, is who is this for sure doing this? Now, Tina knew who it was, but the other girl did not know who it was. And so I would be curious to have them be confronted and see what they would say and why this is okay in their minds. And I don't know. I guess that maybe that just gives credence to them or gives them a platform they don't need. But I don't know. It's just fascinating to think, what is your state of mind that this, you know, no matter what somebody does to you, and maybe this, you know, if you have the most awful girlfriend in the world or boyfriend, and they're just the most mean, miserable person, that doesn't mean that when you break up that it's that you should be doing this to them. You should make a clean break and move on with your life,
right?
You know, and if you get dumped, that's part of life and that's what happens, and some people just aren't meant for you. I mean, gosh, just it's a and I imagine it goes to how they grew up or how they were taught or a mental health issue they have, whatever it is. It's sad that some people think that this is something that's important to do, because it's and it's not just somebody leaving a nasty email or doing something once. I mean, you're following people who just decide that their life's work is torturing somebody, and they will keep this up forever.
Yeah. I mean, in some cases, it's just, you know, truly, it's like mental illness.
Yeah.
Or, you know.
Well, it's got to be, right? Or maybe that's what I want to say to make me feel a little better about it, that it's not just people are this awful and cruel and nasty and evil, that there's some sad reason that they need help and they need to find help themselves. Well, let me ask you, because as you're detailing that things that have changed, there is a moment in the film where I think Anita is speaking to a group, and she says, a lot of times people want to just say to me, but it's getting better, isn't it? Sort of dismissively, like, well, we don't really have to overly worry about this. You were detailing a lot of things just a minute ago that sounds like things are getting better. Are things getting better?
I would say in terms of revenge porn, I think it's so identifiable. It's such a kind of identifiable form of, you know, we can identify that and we can say that's not okay. And it's like, so I would say when it comes to revenge porn, yes, I think that there is progress being made, because I think that we're coming to a point where we can agree. And it's not just women who are victimized in this way. Like, there are lots of men. It's not as effective, because like a picture of a nude man doesn't have the same, you know, baggage and doesn't come with all the stuff that a picture of a nude woman does if it's spread to her family, friends, and workplace. But, you know, it's not only women. It certainly happens to men. And I think that we can kind of, we're getting to a place where we can like recognize and agree, like, okay, that's not cool. Like, you shouldn't be allowed to do that. So that's changing. But I would say when it comes to, you know, other things, like, you know, every time Anita posts something, you know, she's just inundated with, you know, all kinds of garbage. And when it comes to, you know, actually the sort of everyday person who's being threatened, or, you know, thinks they're being followed, or their ex boyfriend has hacked into their computer and is monitoring everything they do, and they're trying to get out of that situation. You know, things like that gray area of those like more nuanced things that are often more complicated, or like, when is a threat a real threat? Is it, you know, if someone sends you a threat on Twitter, you know, how do you get law enforcement to take that seriously? Those battles, I think, definitely still remain. And you know, the other thing that I want to add is that a lot of men who have seen the film have shared with me afterwards, and especially in terms of Tina's story. So Tina was, you know, a Columbia Business School graduate, very successful woman, successful businesswoman working on Wall Street. And after her ex posted, you know, numerous websites saying that, you know, she's an escort. She took, you know, work trips for money. She would abuse, you know, things that companies would look at and say, oh, like, I don't know what's going on here, but I don't want to get involved.
Yeah.
You know, a lot of men have shared, you know, that they live in fear of having someone put a crazy website up out there, someone who maybe has some little thing from their history, their personal history, that they're afraid of them totally, you know, misappropriating and misconstruing and putting out there. And, you know, I think a lot of, we can all understand the fear of having, you know, our most intimate things put out there and used against us. And it's, you know, it's been actually really great to see the response of men who are like, I really get it.
Yeah.
And I really understand how vulnerable we all are.
Yeah, I can imagine. Final question. So when Bully came out in 2011, that was released by the Weinstein Brothers, or the Weinstein Company.
The Weinstein Company,
and
yeah.
And then you're making this film. I don't know what the relation was. You do mention the Me Too movement in this documentary, and Harvey Weinstein gets mentioned. How was that? Were you working with the company at the time when all this was going down and just like, whoa, this is going to be interesting?
I know. It's a very interesting, you know, things have really come full circle. So, yeah, Bully was released. So we independently made Bully and did not work with the Weinstein Company on producing the film. But when we premiered at the Tribeca Film Festival, the Weinstein Company bought it the morning after we premiered. And then we had our national, international, theatrical release with the Weinstein Company, and then we did this big independently. We created the impact campaign for that film. So we did have to work with Harvey. You know, fortunately, I didn't have to work directly with him too much.
Yeah.
But, you know, we certainly did events and screenings and had to deal with him to a certain degree. Fortunately, as a documentary, you know, I don't think we were necessarily, you know, we didn't have to deal as much as others with
sure.
him. But, you know, it's certainly the elephant in the room, so to speak. And then, you know, yeah, it's pretty amazing. Carrie, who's one of the three main women in Netizens, you know, is leading the cases against him and is representing several women in cases against Harvey Weinstein. And she has been at the total forefront of, you know, trying to get him to be held accountable for his actions. So it's an amazing, you know, I think really the transformation of the time we're living in, what's happening it's happening in front of all of our eyes. But in this way, it's been quite personal. But it's a, you know, it's an exciting time, and I hope that he will be held accountable.
You know, it's interesting thinking about the film Bully, because outside of the other disgusting allegations, he always had a reputation of being a bully, right? I mean, as being a hard charging, get what he wants type. Larger than life character. When you had to first meet him, work with him, you were kind of like, well, this is weird, because the film is about not being kind of like how you are. However, we really appreciate that you're going to get the film out there in front of all these people.
Right. It was a very, you know, like, odd experience. He's a terrifying person. I mean, he's just absolutely sucks all the air out of a room because his presence is just so... You know, he has such a sort of aggressive presence.
Yeah.
So yeah, you know, it was a very odd experience to be getting this film out there and getting it, you know, doing so much work in, you know, in the world. But yeah, it was certainly quite ironic. And remains quite ironic that he was the one, you know, that they were our distributor.
Yeah. So I know that this has consumed, I'm sure, an amazing amount of your life, and you're just getting it out there and really promoting it. But I want to ask, what's next? What are you planning on doing next?
Oh, my goodness. It's a great question. I've got some things up my sleeve.
Cannot say, apparently. Okay.
Well, I'm starting a project that touches on the opioid epidemic, looking actually at a doctor who was convicted of selling opioids for cash, and I'm hoping to look a little bit more at, you know, we're hearing so much about the pharmaceutical companies,
yeah.
But I feel like there's been a real gap in exploring, well, what was going on between that relationship between the physician and the patient. And I think that we have yet to really unpack where did physicians, you know, perhaps not hold up their responsibility to their patients' safety and well-being by just prescribing these things like candy.
Yeah. Interesting. Well, yeah. I look forward to seeing that. In the meantime, everybody, the film Netizens is coming out now. It's premiering here in Chicago on Monday the 23rd, 7:30 p.m. at the Carasotti Showplace Icon on Delano in Chicago. To get tickets, go to netizensfilm.com, N-E-T-I-Z-E-N-S, netizensfilm.com. If you can't get out there later in October after the 22nd, be available on Amazon, Google Play, Xbox, and Apple. So you can catch Netizens there. It's an important documentary. Cynthia Lone, I really appreciate you taking all this time to chat with us. If you get through Chicago, we'd love to have you stop by sometime.
Thank you so much, Matt. It was a really great conversation. And I also wanted to add that we will be having a panel and Q&A with special guests that we'll be announcing shortly for that special one-night-only screening in Chicago. It'll be a great night.
Excellent. Okay, so film and discussion.
On September 23rd.
Perfect. Yep. And tickets are still available, right?
Yep.
Netizensfilm.com. Cynthia Lone, thank you so much. We appreciate it.
Thanks, Matt. Have a great night.
You too. We'll talk again.